Hail, cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm relieved. I'm sad. I'm happy. I'm all of these things. This is the sort of uncertain state of emotions at the end of any Premier League season. Now, how do you take this? Are you sad to see the season come to an end? Or is it a mix of emotions like me?
It's a mix. You know, honestly, I wasn't sad yesterday or in the lead up. I was really looking forward to it. I mean, partially because I didn't have a great season, or at least I didn't start off playing that well.
Yeah, you had a great end to the season for sure.
But you know, the lead up was not so hot. And I was you know, doing the podcast is, you know, as much as we love doing it, you know, it's a fair amount of work. And so I was really like, oh, great, 2 months off, fantastic. But then today it was like hopping online, like going to our Twitter feed. And I'm like, oh, God, like it's just 3 months of transfer speculation ahead of me. Just like endless, stupid transfer speculation. Like, where is Mbappe going to go? Is Antoine Griezmann going to come to me? Like, it already started today. Like, what's going to happen with Arsene Wenger? And I don't know. I know that I can be able to resist a lot of this stuff. I don't have the self-control to not read transfer speculation.
I think I saw the tweet today that's saying it was 60% certain that Griezmann was going to Manchester United. And I thought, perfect. That is the perfect percentage for this time of the year.
So I'm a little, you know, I am a little sad for it to be over. But I mean, what's great about it is that it's, you know, unlike in the Premier League where, you know, you kind of have to, you need to have money and you need to have, you know, an owner willing to spend it and you need to have young players, whatever, like you need to not be in the Europa League next year or whatever. Like it's a clean slate for every fantasy manager. You get 3 months off or, you know, let's say 2 months and change, right? Because you start tinkering in July.
Right.
Late July. But you get, you know, 3 months off before the season starts, and it is a clean slate next season, right? We all start in a 4 million way tie for first place or last place if you're a glass half empty kind of person.
Well, this is my what makes me sad. I was talking about this with our friend Ben, who was a co-host during your paternity leave and also winner of the private Always Cheating League this season. Congrats, Ben. I was saying to Ben, the end of the season, it's less sad that it's 9 months of fun that comes to a close. What's sad is we have accumulated so much knowledge and FPL power over the last month, and now it is completely useless. It's gone. And like you're saying, we start with a clean slate next season, but that also means we know nothing.
Right. If anything, that knowledge hurts you next year.
Yeah. We've formed biases over the last 9 months that will do nothing but hold us back next season.
Right. So this is the last episode of the season for at least 2 months. So we saw today if... I think the fantasy Twitter feed said that the league will relaunch, the fantasy league will relaunch the week of July 10th. And given how they did it last year, probably like the last day of that week. So like July 13th or 14th or something like that. So when that comes back,
they've got to get the Dayglo colors just right for the next relaunch.
Yeah. And so we'll do some big reaction pod there. And I remember being really excited about that one last year. And if you look back, I actually made one good prediction this season, which was that I was all about Zlatan. I thought that 11.5 was way too low of a starting price. I thought he was going to be fantastic. And until he was injured, he pretty much was, right? I mean, he was arguably the top striker in the league this year.
Yeah,
until Kane kind of came on at the very end.
Yeah, I feel like, and I was on the other end of the spectrum where I just predicted sort of an MLS cameo season for Zlatan. For me, somehow he managed to do both at once in that he just showed how great a player he is. He just sort of strutted around the field for Manchester United all season before he got hurt. He would pop in a goal here or there, and he did. Yeah, I think he was, at the end of the day, worth that huge price tag.
I remember Luke Thunberg on Twitter, I remember him predicting that Troy Deeney was going to score more points than Zlatan this season.
Well, you know, Luke is a smart manager, but he clearly wasn't right there. Sorry.
Yeah, he still finished like 100,000 spots ahead of me, so you know, I'm sure he'll be okay with one incorrect prediction. So we're gonna run through the top of the Always Cheating League, and we're gonna answer some kind of, you know, season recap, sort of like what do we think about these players and what do we think about next season, and just a lot of questions from listeners of the podcast. And And that's pretty much it. So, I mean, if you're, you know, nerdy enough to keep listening when the season's over, then this is the podcast for you. Cause we're going to kind of go through every in and out of the season that was. And,
yeah, we'll try to make it less a victory lap and more a real sort of educational podcast in light of the 9 months we just experienced.
Yeah, not too educational. It's a scary word.
All right, I'm writing checks I can't cash. Is that it?
All right, so first things first, not that we need to talk about this too much because the season's not over, but you had a pretty strong last game week of the season, right?
Well, I scored 88 points in game week 38, which is exactly 100 fewer points than I scored in game week 37. So if I look at it that way, it seems kind of shocking. But with a game week average of 58, I felt pretty – I mean, if I scored 88 points in any given week, I would be beaming. That would just be huge. It just so happened this was one of those vintage game week 38s of the season where – particularly the first half of all those fixtures, just goals flying in every 30 seconds. We were at the bar with all of our friends, and they had every fixture up on TV, save Spurs Hull, because there was a certain political figure trying to give a speech in Saudi Arabia, which was a strange thing to interrupt Championship Sunday, but we digress. So it was a lot of fun. And to end up with 88 points and a Harry Kane hat trick,
And it was enough for you to win your personal our private head to head league, and you finished second in our overall our other mini league as well. So
yeah, second place in our big cash league, eked it out me and Josh in our personal head to head. I eked it out on overall points. We ended up tying on wins and draws. And I ended up winning our private cash head-to-head league against our good friend Trevor, which is my biggest money haul ever in FPL. So overall, great season. Feels good.
And I finished on 104 points. I was happy with that. I ended up making up about 250,000 spots the last two game weeks. I finished just outside the top 100K. Which was slightly frustrating. I mean, honestly, I think if David De Gea had just started the last two fixtures of the season, I think I would have finished in the top 100K. Unfortunately, I got those. I didn't get him for the second game week of the bench boost. And then, by the way, when we listen to this in like 2 months, all of this like drilled down talk about second game week bench, it's all going to sound ridiculous. So I finished on like 107,000 or something like that, which given that I was at, 1.55 million in game week 23, feels like a pretty good accomplishment, right? Picked up 1.4 million spots.
Absolutely.
In the last 15 weeks. And, I also won the Showstoppers, league, our head to head league. I nicked Siraj. I said I was going to wait until after
Siraj.
I said I was going to have the Super League to do this, but I'm too excited. So,
but it really
took a lot of luck. I mean, I don't know if it was luck or not, but everyone sort of came through for me right at the end. I got a Ben Davies goal, and Llorente had basically a tap in with a couple minutes left in that game.
When I arrived in the morning at the bar, and we were comparing teams before kickoff. You were checking out Siraj's team, and you're like, oh, great, we both captained Harry Kane. And then I had to point out, oh, it looks like Siraj actually triple-captained Harry Kane. And the look on your face was, oh, I'm just lost.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I mean, when Vincent Kompany scored in the fifth minute, and then I was like, okay, that kind of neutralizes. As long as Harry Kane doesn't get a hat trick, I'm okay. And, lo and behold, he did. But what a weird end of the season for Kane, right? Seven goals in his final two games.
Unbelievable. I mean, 29 goals. We'll talk about our heroes of the season, but I think he easily walks away as probably easily the best player in the game this season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there is some debate there, but let's before we get there, let's talk about the let's get into this Hail Trek Super League. Before we do, Brandon, do you want to mention one last time the offer?
Yeah, so we've got a great deal for our Always Cheating listeners. Our friend Jamie at Fantasy Football Magazine is giving us a special deal. You, the listeners of Always Cheating, it's 25% off of a print magazine subscription. The inaugural season of Fantasy Football Magazine kicks off next season, right? I think in July they're going to start cooking up their first issue, and it's 10 issues at £21 plus shipping. You get the print subscription, you get invited to all their special FPL mini leagues next season, and there are only 10 discounts available. So to get the 25% off print subscription, go to fantasyfootballmag.com/alwayscheating, and I put a link to that URL in our podcast show notes. So if you're on your phone or on your desktop, just go to the show notes and you can click to go right to that deal.
That's right. And we don't actually get any money out of this. We'd like to think that occasionally we can pass along a good offer to people who listen to the podcast. So fantasyfootballmag.com/alwayscheating. Now on to the Hail Cheaters Super League.
And we should point out they ship worldwide. This is not an American magazine. I think they're based in the UK, but they can ship anywhere in the world.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I think they have an American distributor, too. So, all right. Hail Cheaters Super League. Should we start? Should we work from 10 up, Brandon?
I mean, this will be the most dramatic reading of the Super League all season.
That's right.
Because once we get to number one, that's it. That's the final number one, the winner.
You said it.
All right, I'll start. So 10th place, locked in, it's Aswan Raj with his squad Red Snout, finishing with 2,406 points. 9th place, Jingming Tan, Riamore 11. 8th place, Banana Nose Maldonado, Matthew Greco's squad.
Nice. Yeah, well done, Banana Nose.
Been a very constant presence in the top 10. 7th place, Abdul Al-Mamoun, finishing on 2,410 points. 6th place, fan favorite, Mitch Maynard, BTSTU, 95 points on the game week. 5th place, KVIG, Eisensen FC, that's Warrett Raxil's squad, breaking the century mark with 101 points in the last game week. 4th place, Cesar Rodart's squad, Cess Boom. And in 3rd, Kingings Mings, that's Darren Anthony Hay. Finished with 2,442 points. In 2nd place, there was definitely some heated competition between 1st and 2nd. I feel like there was a little bit of back and forth during the last month. So Phil Bao finishes in 2nd place, his squad Inzaghi Goal Heroes, an even century mark on game week 38 to bring him to 2,462 points. Phil ranks 75 overall in the world. And in 1st place, drumroll Josh, Anders FK, Bricklayers FC, 2,465 points, ranked 66 overall in the world, had 101 points on the last game week of the season. Well done, Anders FK. You're the Hail Cheaters Super League champion.
Anders also won the Hail Cheaters second half league, our Patreon league. So, Anders, we're going to be reaching out this week to have you on a future episode of the podcast. I was thinking you might want to be on for a maybe want to preview the team of your choice. Join us for a team preview next season. So if there's a team that you like, and assuming you want to be on the podcast at all, keep your eye out for an email from me or Brandon.
And it better not be Real Madrid, Anders.
Yeah, it's got to be the – I would love it if it was Brighton and Hove Albion. I really hope that Anders is just a huge Brighton fan.
Oh, yeah, and gearing up to our team previews for early next season, we want to hear from all those fans of the newly promoted teams.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few Middlesbrough fans this year for sure. No Hull fans. I can't really remember any Hull fans on the podcast, you know, like sending us messages or anything like that.
Tom Huddleston is famously a fan of Always Cheating.
And I don't think you mentioned this, but Anders FK finished 66 overall and Phil Bao finished 75 overall. So really impressive for both of them. I had never even sniffed the top 100, Brandon. Never even felt the odor of a top 100 finish.
Well, you finished top 1500.
Yeah, 1530. So just outside, 30 places outside.
Yeah, I ended up with an overall ranking of 40,888, which keeps my run going. I think that's 5 straight seasons in the top 75K. So I'm nothing if not consistently sort of normal for a fantasy nerd.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and there was I know there's been some talk this, you know, on the just online and on I know Nick Cummings is talking about this on the Transfer Hub website. About how tough it is, you know, just with so much visibility now for these strategy sites, and everyone kind of, it's kind of like when the poker boom took off a little bit, and everyone sort of leveled up, you know, and there just weren't as many bad players as there were before. And I think if you're playing for overall rank, it's always going to be kind of a struggle to really feel satisfied with your season, unless you just it takes a lot of luck, you know. But I think that you've got to break it down into smaller pieces. You know, you've got to join leagues or, you know, start head-to-head leagues. And I think, you know, we did the playoffs for the first time in the head-to-head, and I would say it's unquestionably a hit, right? I mean, you know, huge hit.
Oh yeah, I think it's a hit because sometimes just the random luck nature of the FPL game can work to your benefit in head-to-head, where you could beat somebody who can beat the Anders FKs of the world any given week in a head-to-head. Whereas if you're going to go 38 weeks against Anders, he's gonna kick your ass every time.
Yeah, it's what we know this in America. You know, the playoffs are less fair, but they're more fun. So sometimes you want. I actually, one thing I like about coming from American sports, one thing I like about the Premier League itself is that it is so fair. I mean, okay, I know you like your best player can come down with an ACL rupture or something like that, but in general, you play everybody twice, once home and once away, right? And the team that wins the most wins. And there's no, oh, we were in the Eastern Conference, it's not as strong as the Western Conference, you know, whatever. It's just, you play everybody twice and either you win or you lose. I mean, this ignores all the like socioeconomic factors, but.
Sure. Well, that's what makes the Leicester story so great and sort of unimpeachable is that it becomes less and less a fluke when you look at, well, they played everyone else in the league home and away, and it's unquestionable. They were the best team that season.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, by 10 points, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess. I don't have that fact memorized, Josh.
What, how many points did Leicester win by last year?
Yeah. Was it 10 points?
I think it was like 10 over Arsenal, which is crazy. Arsenal finished five. I think they scored 5 points more than they did last season, and they were still in fifth place.
It's funny to remember that Arsenal finished in second place last season. But the narrative around Spurs all this season is runners. Everyone is saying runners up again because Spurs were the only ones in contention toward the end of the season to win that league title. And whatever one remembers is they ultimately lost the title to Leicester. But they ended up finishing third, and you always forget that, which is kind of crazy.
A little bit of a collapse. I mean, you could tell they were really, you know, focused on not collapsing again this year, right? Because I think they won their last two games. Like the aggregate score was like 140-1 or something like that.
Not to get too off the FPL track, though. But speaking of Spurs and like that progress that they made this season, where you know they came close again. But what happened was they didn't have that same mental collapse. I mean, they came out and scored, you know, a ridiculous number of goals in their last two matches. They're far from collapsing. What do you think they're going to do next season when, speaking of leveling up, like the likes of Man City and Chelsea and even Manchester United, assuming they hit the Champions League, are all going to be leveling up. And Spurs is going to be playing away from home at Wembley all season. I just really wish I could see what the Spurs squad could do one more season at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, it's really too bad. I mean, you can't. They won with enough points to win the league in many years, right? And they just happened to run into a Chelsea team that set a record for wins in a season.
Yeah,
not overall points, but actual wins in a season. So you know, what can you do in that situation?
The Spurs are basically the Karl Malone of the Premier League. They're among the best players, but they just were in a generation in which there were, you know, the bad boys and Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan.
You would think, you know, they might need to strengthen their midfield a little bit, you know, their central and defensive midfield. But other than that, I mean, they certainly look like a team. And maybe they need a little more squad depth, too. I don't think that Vincent Janssen is the answer, but... Well, we'll save all this for our season preview.
Indeed. All right. Should we take a break, Josh, and come back and take some questions about the season now past?
Yeah, let's do it. Same old podcast, always cheating. Season recap, Brandon. We've broken this up into three different sections. We'll see how many we get to because we might just stop this podcast. I mean, it might just be like the end of The Sopranos, and the podcast is just going to fade to black halfway through. Fat Gorilla says he'd love a "What I've Learned This Season" section, and instead of section, let's just say let's each pick one thing we learned this season. Can you think of one thing you learned this season, Brandon?
Absolutely. I have learned too that you live and you die by the low priced bargain bandwagons. And I think I've touched upon this in previous episodes during this season, but if you look at Nathan Ake and Etienne Capoue, these guys were very low price, and they enabled you to do great things with your squad when they were in form. I mean, and different things happened there. Capoue dropped out of form, or sort of reverted back to his natural form, and Nathan Ake got transferred out of Bournemouth back to Chelsea. And I think because prices were so much more volatile this season, I think we experienced this across the board, but no more so than those low-priced assets that were huge bandwagons. And if you slept on them for more than a couple of weeks, I saw my team value suffer incredibly. So what I am taking away from this season going into next season is not to stay away from them, because they're great assets, but you have to be incredibly nimble with these players to get them in on the rise and know exactly when to cut them off at the knees when they start to have diminishing returns.
I think that is, I think it's a great point. I think one of the reasons you had such a good season is you were at your most ruthless this season. I think you really were willing to cut players and bring in players that you'd previously dropped, and I think it made a big difference.
It's a real hard thing to do. And I think you remember there was a couple weeks back to back where I basically oscillated between Lukaku and Zidane. And not Zidane. Wouldn't it be wonderful if I had Zinedine Zidane in my FPL team? Zlatan. And for some reason, I was able to see the forest for the trees with the higher price players. But you've got the bench players, the low price bench players, and you forget about them. But you're right. Like that's moving to a mindset, that ruthless mindset, that will really serve you if you're trying to graduate from the top 75K to the top 25K.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think if I were to add my own, I think it's that being stubborn is the surest way to screw up your own season. I think that. I can think of two examples, one with an expensive player, one with a cheap player. The first one is I think it was around game week 8 or so, it was when I played my wild card. And I was debating between Eden Hazard and Alexis Sanchez, and I went back and forth and back and forth. And they're about the same price. Hazard was a little cheaper, although his price was rising really fast because he'd scored like 23 points against Bournemouth. And so I ultimately went with Hazard and didn't go with Sanchez. And that was right before Sanchez went for like 50, in this home game against West Ham. And Hazard kind of blanked, and I thought, you know what? I think I bet the wrong horse here. I really should just move from Hazard to Sanchez. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do it. And another week goes by and I didn't do it. Another week goes by and suddenly like, I just didn't want to admit that I'd made the wrong move. And I feel like that cost me like 50 points on the season, just not making a move that I could have easily made at several different points over the course of those game weeks. And the smaller one is I bring in Junior Stanislaw when he like inexplicably now he scored like three games in a row or something like that.
So he insane.
Like fell out of form, right? Just like ended up on the bench, like didn't play at all, and then he got injured and so, you know, he's this kind of cheap player. He's a hard player to move. And, you know, lo and behold, like Josh King starts like taking all of the goals that Stanislaw was scoring. And week in and week out, he's performing incredibly well. And I just like didn't want to move from one Bournemouth player to another. I didn't want to like admit that I bought the wrong Bournemouth player. And so I was making like all these other moves to my team and, you know, just moves I didn't need to make when I had this non-playing midfielder who was like my fourth midfielder. And I just didn't want to admit that a lateral move to another Bournemouth player was the way to go. And that cost me like another 30 or 40 points, right?
So do you think that every goal that Junior Stanislaw scored at the end of the season was directed squarely at you? Like what if... If the goal he scores in what was it like the first minute of game week 38, he pulls up his shirt to reveal a why always me undershirt that says yeah. That's for you, Josh Landon.
It did feel weirdly personal, I have to say.
I have a question. I have a question for you. Going back to your story about oscillating between keeping Hazard or picking up Sanchez. I've been thinking a lot about toward the end of the season, guys like Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne, and these are guys that if you look at the stats charts, they're just like way up at the top of just point getters in the FPL. But they are so divisive. They will be very sporadic. And if you take them the long view, you're like, well, if I have Hazard and KDB in my squad all season, I'm getting all those points. But for whatever reason, we just were never considering KDB midway through the season. And yeah. Hazard, he's just so up and down. Like when he's hot, and when he isn't, he's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
So what's your theory about these high-priced midfielders that take up a lot of team value, but if you hang on to them, say, for all 38 weeks, you reap some reward? I mean, you do give up a head-to-head advantage.
Yeah. I guess, that's an interesting question. It just takes a lot of courage to wait it out that long. I mean, especially because, these players, and I don't have any like data here, but I'm just kind of going by my sort of impression of this. These players tend to score in bunches, and they're it's like peaks and valleys of form. So with Hazard, if you're really lucky, you get Hazard right before he starts to, explode. If you're pretty lucky, you get him after his first big game week. And then if you waited until after that, after, two big game weeks in a row or one, by the time you bring him in, it's going to be over again, and you're going to have this 11 million player for 6 weeks where he doesn't do anything. And looks like he's trying to get Jose Mourinho fired again. So I think that and the same has been true of Sanchez, and the same was true with Mesut Ozil last year. I mean, Mesut Ozil, finished as one of the top point scorers last season. But, anyone who's playing the game knows that from, something like game week 23 to game week 33, he didn't do anything, right? He had one or two assists, no goals. I mean, just completely fell out of form. And so, you look at the end of the season and you see that he's one of the, so it doesn't, the way that the points are distributed doesn't seem like you could just hold on to those players, and they get injured too. And so I feel like there's always ample reasons to get rid of those players.
Right, right. Next question is from our friend Tishy on Twitter, who asks, what was your worst transfer of the season? Does one immediately spring to mind for you?
What's his name? The Frenchman.
Johan Cabaye.
Yeah, Johan Cabaye, who I also held on to longer than I should have, mostly because I was annoyed that people were giving me grief about it. And I was like, no, I'm going to hold on to Cabaye. Screw off. I think, I don't know if I was sleeping much around that time. I don't know. I don't know why I thought Cabaye was a good idea.
Well, I think it was the same trap you fell into with James Milner. I think a lot of people, the promise of a PK really messes with FPL managers' minds, right? Because Cabaye at some point in the season was on PKs, and James Milner, as we know, like a PK legend, except for the last one he took this season. And you can justify hanging on to Cabaye because all it takes is one slip up in the box, and you've got a guy like Wilfred Zaha in Crystal Palace who can win you a penalty a match.
Right.
Well, that probably factored into your thinking a little bit.
I think it did. I think it was. I mean, I knew it was a punt. It wasn't like he was that expensive. I don't know what it says about me that I was like so inclined to take a chance in these like white, central midfielders who don't score from open play. I don't think it reflects well. I got to analyze my own bias here.
Yeah, you're unpacking a whole lot right there, John.
What about you, Brendan? What's yours?
It's a weird one for me, and there's some recency, but I think it's spelled out right there in front of me. But Jan Vertonghen, he was a swap out. I swapped out Ben Davies, and I brought in Jan Vertonghen on my wild card. And there was all this chatter online for so long. They were writing country songs about the return of Danny Rose. And it never came to be. And Ben Davies turned from a risky proposition, a temporary Band-Aid, to this incredible asset the last three game weeks where Jan Vertonghen, I brought him in. He was more expensive. He was next to Marcus Alonso, my most expensive defender. And I didn't get a single clean sheet from the best defense in the league. And Ben Davies was rattling in assists, scored that amazing goal in game week 38. And I had him in my possession, and I thought I was getting rid of a risk and bringing in a sure thing.
Yeah,
and
that cost probably, I think, 12 points. And yeah, you might have finished in the top 25K, but you know, you can always think. I mean, I ended up finishing 8 points off third in our mini league, as it turns out. That's incredible. That's one goal and three bonus points.
Yeah, it really is incredible. So that one's a weird one. I'm sure if I went way back into the logbooks, I'd find some other regrettable transfers for sure. I mean, I think I brought in Joe Allen during I missed that run that he had, and then you just become a guy who has Joe Allen on his team.
Right. Okay, let's keep it going here, because this could be like a 3-hour podcast if we're not careful. Ian Davis says, what were your FPL highs and lows this season? I feel like we kind of just went through the lows, didn't we?
Yeah, I can tell you, the highest high I had was getting off the plane, flying back from Scotland after the first fixture of game week 2. It was Manchester United versus, I can't remember if they were playing Stoke or somebody like that.
Yeah.
I had Luke Shaw, Zlatan, and David De Gea. And I didn't know what was going on in the match. And as soon as I booted up my phone when we landed at LaGuardia, I saw I had like 42 points. And that was amazing. And that game week, I think, set the tone for me the rest of the season.
Yeah, I remember that. I actually had those three players too, although I think I had Captain Aguero the next day. But it was easy to get excited about Man United then. I mean, their season was kind of a mixed bag. I mean, I guess Man United fans have to be happy with this season because, you know, they're in the Europa League final. It looks like they're kind of set up better for next. I mean, Marcus Rashford makes them feel good. I mean, there's always that feeling with Mourinho, like, are you really going to be happy with this guy long term? Because he's just so
crazy.
He's so I was going to say defensive by nature. Uh-huh. You know, his instincts are reactive,
right?
And that can be not too fun sometimes. But and when Zlatan was in form, that was just a fantastic, really fun team to watch.
Yeah, he was in form, and Pogba was just sort of like all promise. You're seeing a guy trying to fit into a new team, a new league. He's such an exciting young player. And they were at the start of the season, they were all promise. I remember watching some game with you early in the season, and you turned to me and you're like, could they win the league? And even, I mean, it seems crazy at this point, but it seemed possible.
The one thing I will say is, if I were Luke Shaw, I would be running to sign with somebody else. I mean, there is nothing but misery for him in the future at Man United.
I'm sure. Yeah, you're telling him something he already knows.
He's
sure.
21 years old, right, or 22, whatever he is. Like, go to Spurs or go to wherever. You know, like he's not going to have to drop down. I don't think. I think he can make a lateral, especially as a, you know, as an Englishman in the Premier League. And you know, it's always because of, you know, financial or whatever they're called, but FA rules, right? You need to have some homegrown players in your team. So I think that, you know, Liverpool or I don't know. I mean, fans of these teams would all probably have their own opinions about this, but it seems like he could fit in another big club.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just getting back to Ian's question, I think my low thinking about this is when Lukaku had his 4-goal game and most people had him captained and I did not. And I think I had a big red arrow that week.
Yeah, I have talked about a lot of my lows already. I think the high for me was kind of a cumulative thing. I think I finished with like 14 green arrows in my last 16 game weeks, and I wildcarded a bit early. I think I wildcarded around game week 30, maybe. Maybe even earlier than that, 28, something like that. I'm so glad that I did, because it just made the season a lot more fun for me. And I felt like I was breaking free from that kind of trap of, you know, doing it the same way everybody else was doing it. And by everybody else, I mean everybody who's like on these forums. And I know that the right way to do it was that. I mean, we've talked about this endlessly already, but this feeling that like, I was like, oh, like I'm like gaining points and, you know, I'm winning head to head matches. I mean, if you're in a head to head league, wild carding early is like a no brainer. If your team's not going well, or if your team's not doing well, I mean, you can just pick up, you're just going to have so many better players than, the players who are waiting to wild card, you know? And so I ended up going on a huge run in both of like many of our mini leagues, as a result of that. So, you know, so yeah, I think that was definitely the high, just this like feeling that like I hadn't lost it, you know, that like just whatever I think this, you know, I hate to even say this cause it sounds so, like such sour grapes, but this really feels like my unluckiest season. I felt like a lot of the moves I made really blew up in my face. Mm-hmm. And, I don't think, I mean, I've blamed the baby before and being more tired, and I'm sure that was a factor, but I feel like I thought a lot about that. It was not to be at 1.5 million when you were thinking about the game as hard as I was. I mean, talking about it on the podcast every game week, it was crazy. Like that, you have to have some bad luck for that to happen because it wasn't like my team was a team full of like crazy differentials or something. So yeah, so that was the high, was just coming back from that and feeling like, okay, I actually know how to play this game and and pick up points.
Got your sea legs back.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Dave Aston on Facebook says, only one thing left to be decided. Best FPL asset over the season. Sanchez, the obvious one, but for any others, make a case. Ali, Sigurdsson, Kane, Heaton. This is Dave speaking. My vote for FPL player of the year, though, is Pickford. What a hero. I mean, I can't dispute the Pickford shout. I mean, this is a guy who, despite all odds, was bringing you 6 points while still letting in, you know, 3, 4, 5 goals a match. But who gets your vote? I mean, are you going to go a big heavy hitter?
How about maybe I'll split it between Ali and Eriksson. How much fun it was this year to have either one of those players. And then when we all realized you could just have both of them. And then every game week, you were just getting like 10 points from both your, you know, from both Spurs midfielders. That was my kind of MVP. I'm going to split it. So yeah. And Kane, you know, obviously helps with that as well.
Yeah. I feel like there was a window in the season where Big Rom really just had the mojo and you felt really confident going into almost every game week with Big Rom that he was going to at least get you a goal. And I know he had trouble away from home, but he was more fun this season. Like I feel like he did as best he could to shed his troll Kaku status. Now, in the end, he wasn't able to fully shed himself of that.
No. To get a late goal, if he had missed that penalty in the Arsenal game, that would have really been kind of the final straw for him, right?
Yeah.
He would have been branded troll Kaku forever.
I like Dave's shout at Sigurdsson. I mean, yeah. Sigurdsson just wasn't able to really keep it going. I mean, he was on a really challenging squad, but I do feel like he shined this season as just a really class player and a great FPL asset.
Josh King, too.
Yeah, King, right up there. I think you'd put King and Sigurdsson in the same category.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, like I said at the start of the podcast, I walk away with Harry Kane. Is the man, but I think that's as a premium players go. But I do like this idea of cheap guys, like, because guys like Jordan Pickford, they're the guys that make your FPL squad actually work. You need you need these guys to balance the books as it is. So, but yeah, Kane for me.
Okay. Jeff Petter has a bunch of different points here. I'm just going to pick one.
Before we get to Jeff Petter's point, though, we'd have to thank him for our new profile pic on Twitter, where we're sporting the amazing T-shirts that Jeff put together for us.
That's true. In case anyone's curious, I'm the short guy and Brandon's the bald guy.
There we go. We both have our beautiful features.
That's right. So Jeff says, what gained or lost you the most? Baines over Coleman is one that sticks in my mind. I kind of forgot about Seamus Coleman. Right?
It was so long ago for a while.
Yeah. So what gained or lost for what was your best move, I guess, is another way to put it.
I think picking up Sadio Mane when Coutinho went out injured. I think you saw that Liverpool midfield was kind of in doubt. There was a I'm trying to figure out what the timeline was. Coutinho got injured and basically broke up the just like bullet train that was Liverpool.
Right.
And then Mane went away to African Cup of Nations. And I think it was right when Mane came back, there was a conundrum of which Liverpool player to bring in. And Mane was a differential in some ways. It was before he was picking.
Yeah,
he would end up picking.
I hear you. You don't have to explain any further. We all know who Sadio Mane is.
You ever heard of this guy?
Yeah, that's it. I'm trying to think if I hit any early season ones. I mean, the first half of the season seems so long ago now. I guess I'll just go with Ben Davies because I got on him really early, and he was just such great value. I think I got him at 4.7 million, and I felt like, you know, with the exception of only like one or two game weeks the last 15 weeks of the season, he was just fantastic.
Jeremiah Johnson says 3-5-2 formation. Hindsight, was it the way to go this season, or should it be a greater consideration for next? I played 3-5-2 after my wild card. I think there's a shout for Anichibe at one of our questions later on in the podcast, but it really worked for me, the 3-5-2. I don't know that I would want to play it all season, just because
it forces you to rely on Kapuei goals.
It does, yeah. I mean, it feels like a little bit more like balancing a bunch of spinning plates, the 3-5-2.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the 12 points I got from Llorente in the last game of the season. You know, this 6 million third striker, and it was 12 easy points, right? I mean, kind of like to get 12 points from a fourth midfielder is so difficult, you know. Or I just feel like I'm still committed to the 3-4-3. God help me. Have mercy on my soul.
Something that really defined this season for me is how form players were so sporadic. The form was fleeting. It would come and go. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I think that benefited the 3-5-2 thinking, because you could chop and change in your midfield. And there were more options for midfielders than there were for strikers this season.
Yeah, I guess I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know. I don't know if there is a definitive answer. If you feel like, if you're listening to the podcast and you feel like you have some kind of statistical analysis of this, I don't even know how you. Well, I mean, if you're able to do statistical analysis, you know how to do this. But I don't know how to do this about whether the 3-4-3 or 3-5-2 is or some other formation, maybe 5-4-1 is the way to go.
Well, the thing to say is we don't know. There, at the beginning of last season, when Riyad Mahrez and Jamie Vardy just emerged, no one would have predicted that. I mean, some people. What I'm saying is the beginning of next season, you don't know who's going to immediately emerge, and maybe there's just going to be three must-have strikers right out of the gate, and this 3-5-2 conversation will be but a memory.
Yeah, I mean, there are unique conditions that really, especially when Charlie Austin got injured, right? That like really opened the door for 3-5-2, because there was not a great third option for a while there.
All right, Andy Lakeman on Facebook says, thoughts on this year, nightmare. Predictions for next, I'm winning it. So on the scale of on the scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is dream season and 1 is complete waking nightmare, where do you fall on this season?
Like a 2, maybe? Like, it was a it was a truly horrible season for me that was redeemed at the end. But I mean, to finish us at the top 100K is really disappointing. To not cash in any of our mini leagues, which hasn't happened to me that often.
You usually get cash in the mini leagues. So
yeah, so that was not fun either. To actually pay money at the end of the season was not anything I wanted to do. So yeah, I mean, I definitely like a 2. I mean, a 2, maybe I was going to say like a 3, but I think 2 just because of the bad luck I had this year.
I think I fall onto like a 7.5. I feel like it was overall a pretty good season, but it was a lot of work this season. I feel like every week you're having to keep up with some sort of injury news or rotation doubt.
Yeah. It was an interesting season. It was a fun FPL season. Just my personal season did not go that well.
Yeah, unique if nothing.
Yeah,
else.
I enjoyed doing the podcast.
All right, we're moving on to the next section now, Josh, which we have dubbed I'm Curious.
All right, let's take a quick break first.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Section two, I'm Curious, FPL Conundrum says, anyone you guys would like to see in the Premier League next season and maybe an estimate of their price? Let's each pick one player, Brandon. Is there one player you want to see?
Well, one of my great disappointments was putting American young hero Emerson Hyndeman on my bench the first week of the season, only to see him disappear into the Scottish Premier League.
That was so risky. I still can't believe you did that. It would not have taken that much for him to come on and get you 0 points.
Yeah, well, no, it would have.
Or I guess he wouldn't have come on, but just to have 0 points.
It's true. I guess that shows like the hubris that you have going into game week one. Sure. You're just all about you. It seems more fun than yeah. You're so much more innocent.
I feel like it was like only like two seasons.
Going into the trenches in the Somme. Like you're like, oh, this will work.
I feel like it was only like two seasons ago where I had to go like three deep in my bench like the first game week of the season.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to not go the route of Antoine Griezmann or Mbappe,
right?
But more sort of, I don't know, just fun people I'd like to see in the league. I mean, like Christian Pulisic, another great young American player who's crushing it at Dortmund right now.
DeAndre Yedlin.
Yeah, DeAndre Yedlin is going to be back in the Premier League with Newcastle. Apparently one of the best backs in the championship last season. So we'll see what sort of funky haircut he can come up with when they're back in the Prem.
Yeah. What about I was thinking about Mbappe. My concern with him is that it could turn into an Anthony Martial situation where he just, I don't know. He's too good not to play though. Right. I mean, there was some quote from him where he's like, well, I don't have to move the season cause I want it wherever I am. I want to play. And yeah. I mean, he's only 18, but this guy's like, you know, I mean, the way they're talking about him, it's like, you know, he's going to be like a, you know, Ballon d'Or winner in the next couple of years.
So Liverpool seems like the most natural move for him. I mean, Champions League football.
No, I don't think he'd go to a club. No, no offense to Liverpool managers, but I think for him, it's like he moves to Real Madrid or he just stays at, or maybe Man City or something like that. But, you know, it's like, it's got to be like a club that's in the, like, that's like, that could actually win the league next year.
Win the Champions League.
Win the Champions League.
Or their own league.
Right. And both, I guess.
Okay, so anybody else you're keen on? How much do you think Mbappe would cost, though, if he came to the FBL?
That's an interesting question. I think he would cost 10. Yeah, 10 seems about right. 9.5, 10. I'm trying to think of, like, anyone. I mean, I do follow the other leagues a little bit, but I just don't have any strong opinions.
I feel like a team like Arsenal has kind of ruined us for rejects of La Liga. So Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, they've been fun players to watch, but because they've played at very sort of dour teams like Arsenal, I feel like a guy like James Rodriguez, I'm wary of the narrative that brings him to the Premier League.
Yeah, James Rodriguez would be kind of interesting. I know that. Can't you see him going to a club like Chelsea? Like,
he can play alongside Pedro, another La Liga reject.
Take a spot more likely. All right. So Stevie Sunshine says it'll be interesting to see how they class wingbacks next year if they stay as defenders. And it kind of ties in with a comment that Kent Obi-Bong says, which is that now that every team will play a 3-4-3, that is every Premier League team will play a 3-4-3 for 3-5-2 next year, how will this affect our choices? Will the FPL classify Moses, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and Milner as defenders, or Alonso et al. As midfielders? I mean, to me, Milner has to be classified as a defender next year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because Liverpool more or less played four at the back.
Right.
Very traditionally, Milner was playing a defender. And it reminds me of, when we get to the wingback discussion, this is like the next level of the defensive midfielder discussion that was surrounding guys like Eric Dyer a couple seasons ago. Mm-hmm. Dyer had been classified as a defender up through last season. And he played sort of alongside the Victor Wanyama role. And this season they classified him as a defender, therefore nullifying any value that Eric Dyer had in the FPL game. March on Fantasy Football Scout said something interesting. I know he's kind of instrumental in this thinking, but he was saying that this classification structure, the FPL should think about it in terms of what can you do to make any FPL player more appealing to bring into your team?
Right. So that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. So it's like, what do you do to a guy like Victor Moses to make him more appealing to place him into your squad? And I think he would argue to make Moses a defender makes him more appealing. With all the midfield options in a team like Chelsea, Moses was not the one.
It's not like Moses scored 14 goals with 10 assists this season. You know, I mean, if you make him a defender, he's maybe not even still the defender you'd want in that squad, right? I mean, as a 5.5 million Chelsea defender, maybe. If he's at 5.5, at 6, you know, I don't know. Like, it's a little pricey for a guy who can't score, you know?
But then I mean, onto Alonso, you have to keep Alonso a defender.
Alonso could have a crazy price next year if he's a defender, like 7.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, Baines got up to that price bracket at some point.
Yeah, I mean, he was on Penn, so I guess that did change things a little bit, but I think 7, that's my prediction. And that was what Vincent Kompany was a couple years ago. I think 7 for Alonso sounds right.
I've got no problem with this. Maybe we need to change our way of thinking. The defenders have got the short end of the stick for too long. You guys have been paying too little for your defenders.
And once again, if you're listening, FPL website, site managers or whatever, one, we want to have you on the podcast. Look us up. And two,
we love you.
And two, replace the outlet attack with a double defense chip. I want those double Ds. I want five defenders in the back. I want my keeper. I want the chance for 12 clean sheets in one game week.
I love that the big takeaway that comes out of our newly coined "I'm curious" section is Josh saying, "I want those double Ds."
Jeremiah Johnson says, "Cheap keepers are the way to go." It seems, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm like newly converted this season. I started the season with David De Gea. I've always played it very safe with the keeper position, in terms of just like getting in a sure starter and looking for clean sheets. And Pickford and Heaton were just MVPs this season. Cheap. Great save points, a number of clean sheets, especially for Heaton.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we saw with De Gea down the stretch. I mean, the one thing about having cheap keepers, too, is that the team typically needs them to play. There's no rotation with a cheap keeper, right? Because you need to stay in the league or you need to pick up points or whatever. But if you are, a top keeper, then you're at the risk of rotation for, you know, like with the Europa League or just because, like, I guess Mourinho just doesn't want to play De Gea anymore because they're going to trade him in the offseason. It didn't actually hurt them at all, which is kind of crazy, right? Like, they kept 2 clean sheets without him.
I don't really want to talk about it, but what is the weirdest lineup you've ever seen that Manchester United?
I know. How did it work?
Where do they find these people?
I literally didn't know half the players in that lineup. I mean, I'm not a Man United supporter, so I'm sure they know. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's our I'm curious section. Let's move straight into extra time chat. These are our final questions of the season. James McCauley says, this season
no relation.
This season it was fun seeing Josh discover one of the best perks of having kids, blaming things on them. That's very true. And I look forward to keeping that going. You might have to have a kid, Brendan, just so you can blame any FPL bad luck that you have next season or in the seasons to come on your baby.
I might, or maybe I'll just get a second job and I can blame.
Right now, as we pod, I've got this monitor to my left, right? And I'm watching the baby sleep. I'm still, you know.
If my wife and I get going right after we're done recording this podcast, it's going to take us 9 months. That puts
us. No, but the whole time she's pregnant, you're allowed to blame that too.
Oh,
it's very stressful. Oh,
okay. So yeah, I can actually make this a reality for the start of next season. Okay.
Yeah, let's make this happen.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Richie says, initial view on game week one, must have players. I know it's very early and no fixtures or price. Richie, it's too early. I can't even begin to think about next season yet. It's gonna stress me out. Like you need things to end so that they can begin again. This season needs this Ragnarok, Brandon, so that we can emerge anew at the start of next year.
I have an answer for Rishi, though. You're going to start Griezmann, Mbappe, and Gabbiadini. That's your front three.
Okay.
Gabbiadini is going to be the top scoring forward next season.
I think Anthony Marshall gets reclassified as a forward and scores 50 goals next season.
He might get classified as a wingback now.
George Owen says, how do we best prepare for next season? I think you got to sleep, right? Pick up catcher's ease.
You have to make yourself right, George. You have to be happy with who you are as a person outside mm-hmm. of FPL.
Yes.
Be your best self. And then when the season starts, it's not an all or nothing proposition.
And if you're an American, this is your chance to sleep in on Saturday. So you got to make the most of that.
Yeah, as our friend Steven Schaller said, it's time to hit that farmer's market.
And TJ Crane says, this is more of this is a question, but we're going to turn into a call for the listeners. He says, players to consider for our teams next year from the new teams entering the Premier League. Obviously, Brandon and I can talk about, Newcastle a little bit. But if you're a Newcastle supporter, a Brighton Hove Albion supporter, or a supporter of, whoever wins between Reading and Huddersfield Town.
Hashtag never Reading.
Reach out to us because we'd love to talk to you about either writing something for our website or maybe coming on the podcast to talk about those teams next year, because I think a lot of people are really curious. And I know that, just when you and I met up with Danny Bean, our newest Patreon supporter, a couple days ago, he was talking about Sheffield Wednesday, who sadly didn't make it, in an incredible amount of depth,
Oh, yeah. He was saying like a guy like Forestieri is first in his 15 at the start of next season at Sheffield Wednesday made it.
We actually had one new Adam McAvoy is actually the newest Patreon supporter. So thank you, Adam.
Sorry, Danny. You're no longer number one.
And Brandon, that's it. Any final thoughts?
My final thoughts is this has been a very fun season for Always Cheating. I really have a special place in my heart for our listeners. Everyone is so enthusiastic and helpful and fun to chat with. So thank you for listening and being in touch and making it worthwhile for us to do this pod.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way.
Sorry if I made you cry, Josh, there for a moment.
No, I was just it's very dusty in the room, Brandon. I completely agree. I mean, it was kind of like down the stretch, we got so many nice comments that was like, it was hard to believe, like I was really like, wow, like I couldn't believe that people were so, we talked about this a little bit when we had Ken Rooney on the Patreon podcast, but it's just amazing how nice everyone, almost with almost no exceptions, is to us, and how appreciative people seem to be of us for doing the podcast. I mean, even with the Patreon thing, it's not like, we definitely don't do this for the money. It's just something that we do because it's fun to talk about this stuff. So we'll be back in July.
My ultimate takeaway from that, Josh, though, is that Always Cheating isn't big enough yet, because I'll know when Always Cheating is a huge monolith of FPL when we actually get nothing but hate mail.
That's true.
That's a sign of true success.
Yeah. So keep an eye out on Facebook and Twitter. We'll update when new podcasts come. Please stay subscribed on iTunes. And you can find us on Patreon. I certainly understand if you don't want to become a Patreon supporter for a couple of months still, but we'll be back in July with new Patreon features. If you have any suggestions for new sort of benefits for being a Patreon supporter next year, please send those to us. And And as Brennan said at the top of the podcast, if you are interested in getting a fantasy football magazine delivered to your home, which is pretty cool, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'm subscribed. I can't wait to get my first issue.
So you got a fantasy.
I paid full price.
You did. Fantasyfootballmag.com/alwayscheating. And then you get access to a 25% off discount.
And I'll put that hyperlink in the show notes of this podcast. So you just click to the show notes on your phone or your desktop, and there's the link right there.
Excellent. You can always find us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters. Facebook, we're facebook.com/alwayscheating. On email us anytime you want, even all summer if you just want to check in and say hi, or if you're visiting New York and want to reach out. We are hailcheaters@gmail.com.
And if you think that your overall rank was at all improved by listening to Always Cheating, I challenge you to go give us a 5-star review on iTunes. because that will help us grow and help us be more awesome and help us tell our moms that we're a success.
That's right. And Brandon, one final note. I sent this to Leela and Kate, our wives, because I was so excited about this. And so thank you very much to Alex Tesla. Subject, no relation. To the email, fans in Scotland. Has said, "Hi, guys, let you be interested to hear this story, which highlights how your pod is growing. Says, I listen to podcasts in my car speakers while stuck in traffic. It was particularly hot in Glasgow today, and I opened the window around the same time as I played your most recent podcast. It was a very hot day. As your intro came," he's really emphasizing, because I think he doesn't think that we believe that Glasgow ever gets hot. As your intro came on, I tried to turn the volume down as I didn't want to display my nerdiness to all passersby. Completely understandable. But it was too late. I drove away embarrassed that I had drawn all this attention to myself before I heard someone in the street flapping his arms wildly, shouting, "Hail Cheaters!" I couldn't turn back, but I thought it was awesome that your pod is recognizable from the intro song and some of your voices. Anyway, I guess the guy listens to the pod. I'm sure he would love a shout out. It was around 5:30 in Jamaica Street besides the bridge, and he had ginger hair and tattoos. So thank you, Alex. Thank you,
that Ginger. That describes like about 5 million people in Glasgow, perhaps.
But thanks, Alex. And that was pretty cool. And anytime anyone even knows about the podcast who isn't like our immediate friends and family, we get excited about it still, even after 2 years. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Special shout out to Sam Vokes, Farfig Nugan. You did it. What a season for Sam. Looking forward to you next season.
He's replaced Ben Bacani, really, as the mascot of the podcast.
What do you think Sam Vokes is going to be priced at next season? Oof. Is he going to hit 7.5?
I think
with all these goals he scored?
I think you've got to go 13. I think you just start high, and if his price falls, Sam Vokes, so be it.
Yep. Hard 13.
Hard 13. All right, Brandon, I'll talk to you next season.
See you next season, Josh. Goodbye, Mbakani.
Praise and say goodbye, Mbakani.